Hello, and welcome back to the On Farm Trials podcast. We at the PNW Farmers Network are excited to have you join in for Season 2 to hear the On Farm Trials with Soil Health and Cropping Systems Innovation on the dryland grain farms here in the Inland Pacific Northwest. The first episode of Season 2 is a short introduction to Jason and Jill Bishop of Living Heritage Farm in Edwall, Washington. In this preseason episode, Jason and Jill describe coming back to the farm and working to build out value-added direct marketing enterprises to support the addition of their family on the farm. Hear their experiences ranging from specialty beef to seed increases from the Einkorn Heritage grain patch that started in their suburban Seattle backyard. The next full episode with Living Heritage Farm dives deeper into the agronomy of their on-farm trials as their farm succession plan increases the cropland acres their family takes over. Don't miss these first episodes to kick off another great season of On-Farm Trials. We're glad you're here. I'm your host, Carol McFarland. Today, we're outside of Edwall, Washington on Living Heritage Farm with Jason and Jill Bishop. We're really excited to talk with them about all the things they're growing here on the farm. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having
us. Thanks, yeah. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah.
Awesome. Let's start by talking a little bit about your farm name. Living Heritage Farm is, it's not just like a last name incorporated, is it?
Yeah, no, it's not. Well, it's like all things we name with our children or with the farm. It started on a spreadsheet, I think. There's a bunch of choices.
Many good things start on a spreadsheet.
Yes, they do. We really like the idea of what the name encompasses, and specifically the two words, living. We wanted to have the idea of life that is going to be represented on our farm. So whether it's in our vegetable garden or our livestock or the big acre crops, the idea that we are infusing it with life and stewarding that life. And then the other key part was heritage. And I was just fascinated by the history of agriculture and how some of that knowledge has been lost and how we could perhaps bring it back to life and show it and use it in a modern context. And so that kind of is where I originated the name in my mind. And Jill has kind of perspective on it too.
We have... just so much has been given to us to steward. This farm has been in the generations for five now. Mm-hmm. And it's just been such a gift to us. So we understand that we're just here for a time. And this is a heritage that we've been given.
And you're continuing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep, we got four little continuations running around.
Awesome. So how long have you guys been back on the farm?
We came back in...
2016.
Yeah, 2016. I think it was just the fall. So I don't know. We started doing... this is the classic story. Loving parents have three boys, and the farm is, you know... always struggling because farms always struggle. And they're like, you guys should go get degrees and move off the farm and get good jobs, good paying jobs. And then, so we're out in the real world for a period of time. And then we realize, you know, maybe the farm is really where it's at. So we come back. And it really was kind of a shift in a lifestyle, but we did it a lot for our children and the experiences they could have growing up. And I think it's been a good choice.
Yeah, we wouldn't go back.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. My grandfather actually called that feeling of that love of the land and the lifestyle, He called it the disease. And it's amazing how much his lineage truly reflects that, all in different ways. But all of us have that disease.
You know, what's that saying? You can take the kid off the farm, but you can't take the farm out of the kid or something like that?
Yeah, but ain't nobody got life skills like farm kids, so you can't beat it. Well, with that in mind, let's start with your management goals on your farm.
So kind of really big picture. Like, what do I want to accomplish on the farm? It was framed by my good friend, Chris Eckhart. I really want freedom. And I want to be able to farm in a way that is independent from the attachment of large chemical corporations, big dealers with lots of equipment that they want to sell me.
Government subsidies.
Subsidies. I just want to be able to take what God's given to us and be able to multiply it and share it with our community. And I think there's a lot of strings attached to agriculture right now that I'm trying to figure out how to cut them and how to separate from them. And so a part of that is in my management goals is to try to find a way to farm biologically, because I see that as like the only path out of this conundrum I think we're in.
Well, and if I'm not mistaken, there's a whole food component to that as well.
Yeah. So when we came back to the farm, the classic story, like I said, you know, push the kids off the farm and we just couldn't help ourselves and we had to come back. When we came back, my father and my mother, they were on their retirement, you know, it's on the horizon. And they said, you know, it's great that you want to come back, but there just isn't enough farm to support two families at the same time. So you're going to have to figure out some way to carry yourself over until your dad's ready to retire. So that kind of started the thought process of, well, how can we do some vertical integration on the farm and do some value added something, anything to, you know, help pay the bills. And so we quickly landed on cattle as an opportunity. And then also I had, through some health challenges, I had read a book called Wheat Belly, which basically told the entire world that gluten was going to destroy us all. And
there might be different opinions on that.
There's probably different opinions.
But also different body types, like different yes. bodies. And, you know, that's one of the things that nature yes. tells us is that things are diverse.
Yeah. I think the book really made me start asking questions like, why do we farm the way we do? And what is harmful about wheat today? Why are there so many gluten sensitivities showing up today than there was in the past? Why do I have these gluten sensitivities? And there was like a little blip on the very beginning of the book talking about the original wheat, einkorn. And so I thought, oh man, if this einkorn, if there's something special about it, maybe I could eat gluten again. And so that's when I started growing einkorn in our backyard.
In our backyard in Seattle suburbs.
Yeah. Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah. This would probably been like 2014-ish. Yeah. And so we were getting small samples and trying it in our lawn, took out some grass and put in some einkorn. And yeah.
Yeah. And then, yeah, in that process, we figured out that he, with his arthritis, that he needed to have no gluten, but then we also came across sourdough and the long ferment, and that has changed his world. When we first began, the gluten-free breads were pretty cardboard tasting.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of ways to go wrong in the gluten-free space for sure.
Yeah.
But no, I'm sorry, Jason, I got to out you, because one of the first times we talked is because I noticed you bringing your own bread to the lunch line at one of the conferences
that we were attending.
And I mean, I had to ask because it's just obviously something fun is going on there. So what I just heard though was that, you know, that living portion that you were talking about in terms of your management goals is something that not only translates to your production management goals, but it really sounds like that's translating throughout your food chain, if you will, in your family. But, and how has that looked from the vertical integration path? How is that? Like, I want to know more about growing einkorn and how that has evolved from the backyard in Seattle to the Living Heritage Farm now here in Edwall in 2024.
So we hit the ground running pretty hard. We acquired some einkorn And we grew it out over a period of years. And at one point we had a field of probably 30 acres of einkorn growing. We quickly found out that einkorn is a hulled grain. And the challenge we had was, how do you take that hull off and process it? So long story short, there's now like a few super sacks of einkorn sitting in my building just waiting to find a method of de-hulling where we'll grow it out more. But in the meantime, like Jill just talked about, we found out that my health concerns with gluten could be alleviated by using the sourdough process. So it really didn't matter if the bread came out of a bag in the store or whether it was ground from my own wheat in my tanks or if it was einkorn. I could still tolerate it as long as it went through.
Exactly. Microbially mediated predigestion.
Yes.
Ooh, that doesn't make it sound very yummy, does it?
Yeah. They do the hard work for it. So on the vertical integration side, we thought that we could take it all the way from grain to a consumer product. And going through that process would require, depending on the level. I think we could do flour without the full-on Washington State Department of Agriculture approved kitchen. But if we went beyond that, say we did bread mixes, or if we did pancake mixes, or if we did pasta, it's going to require facilities to be able to perform all those culinary tasks. And you've actually taken the training to do those, but we don't have a kitchen.
Yeah. Now, what is the process of uncovering what that value-added chain looked like? Have you done a lot of that, Jill?
No. What he's talking about is food handling, the food handler's permit. But when we built our building, when we came back to the farm, we built this building down by the others down there. And they, we had the idea of having a USDA approved kitchen so that we could explore some of those opportunities and value added products. But in the process, Jason's been also taking over the main farming for his father. So
yes, his dad retired a few years ago.
Yeah.
So one of the things that really impacted me is I had the opportunity to tour Bluebird Farms in Winthrop area, and I got to see his operation. And I don't want to say that he's crazy, but after watching all the things that he does, all the hats he wears, I think he is actually crazy. It's so impressive what he's able to do and what he has done. But I realized that as a father that's trying to help raise my family and then trying to pay the bills, there's just no way I could spread myself that thin to support that kind of a vertical integration piece. So we started paring back a little bit in that regard.
Well, I'm excited to hear a little bit more about some of the other ways that you've kind of had a crazy impact on Eastern Washington with the Flourish Project, of course. Mm-hmm. Are you guys still doing your value-added beef? And I know, Jill, you were working on the website a little bit, but I know like life gets crazy and I hear a huge investment in your shared goals around the living heritage being around the family and your family mm-hmm. getting just being really embedded in the farm. And what does that look like for you guys?
Well, we homeschool. And so that, it's an ongoing adventure, takes time. And, we're blessed to be able to do it and to be with the kids. It means that I can't be in
and involve them.
Yeah, really.
I was going to ask how much farm work you get out of your kiddos.
Well, we have goals on that. We might start milking a cow so that they can develop more regular habits. But
they were out on the chicken butchering. They did not want to participate.
Yeah.
Really? Those are some of my like earliest childhood memories right there.
We went in with really some neighbors on that. And so they got the go ahead to not be involved.
I saw it from a distance.
No, they were helping, though. They helped raise them and feed them. So that was a good portion. And they each have their segmented jobs, caring for dogs, cats, pigs, bunnies, chickens. We have one of our kiddos is, her job is to care for the chickens and to feed and to gather eggs and to let us know when they need water. And we wanted to encourage her in that, help her to realize the benefit of her work. So we're in the process of, we have scaled up in our chickens. We're waiting for them to start laying larger amounts. But with her taking the reins on an egg business. Just we want to include them in and pass on that this is a good life, you know, not shooing them away and saying, you need to find something better. Because this is obviously it. We think it's better. We see value. We think that it's great here. So yeah, we want to pass that on to the kids.
We're trying to encourage the entrepreneurial side of their experience too. So whether it's crafting little trinkets that our oldest does, or eggs, or you know, maybe I can involve them in the cattle business more so in the future. And Evelyn this year, she helped doing some swathing, which was saved me several days of work. So, I mean, they're getting to the point of in their age where they're doing more than just opening gates, which is great.
Awesome. See, life skills.
Yeah.
Farm kids. Yeah. Life skills.
They're going to be helpers.
I love that. So do you want to, I think we're going to lose you here probably pretty soon, Jill, but if you, do you want to talk a little bit about your guys' adventure in direct marketing beef?
Yeah. So let's see, we coming from Seattle, we have some great friends still back there. And my sister's family lived there as well. And so we have a lot of connections there. And
they want beef.
Yeah. And when we wanted, when we began, we were just getting plugged in here with a network of people, but we had the majority of our friends were back there. And so we were, saying, hey, we'll raise beef for you if you want to buy it. And they said yes. So that's been, yeah, it's been an ongoing adventure of 6 years, maybe.
That's the good side. What's the bad side,
though? The bad side is, yeah, all of the management of all of that. So these people were not your average beef customers of buying a whole or half beef and going and picking it up from the butcher. And our butcher is in Odessa. And so for them to drive from Seattle to Odessa. So it's a lot of, just management of dividing up, cut sheets, walking through what that looks like to someone who's never dealt with a cut sheet.
Tell them what a skirt steak is.
Yeah.
What do I do with a short rib?
Yeah.
They don't, these aren't cuts they usually would buy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Handling all the payment and communications was, it was a lot of work. And it's something that we haven't really, I guess, thought that it would be there for the long term. And so I guess we haven't set up long term infrastructure like with middlemen on handling all of that. So we did all that.
Jill did all that.
Yeah.
And that was on the beef side. And on the grain side, it was a challenge. I just had a hard time. You know, people want to buy some of our grain to mill at home. And it could be, you know, heirloom. It might be special. It might be grown in a way that they agree with. But I just feel terrible, you know, putting it in a FedEx box. And I charge him what, you know, I think is a fair price. And it was like $20 for a box for the grain. But then you go to pay the postage on it, it's another $20 on top of that. And so when you get the price on top of that, you just think, man, are they really getting the value out of this? And I have a hard time, you know, trying to market really expensive grain, and mostly half the price is in shipping.
Yeah, it's really interesting to hear. There's opportunities, it seems like, in this space to add more value and capture more value as producers in this agri-food chain that we have. I also heard that, like, your butcher is in Odessa. Why is your butcher in Odessa?
Because they're really good.
Well, they're good. And there isn't many butchers anymore. I mean, it's all the number of USDA processors. We wanted to go the USDA route because that allowed us to take it down to the piece part and we could sell individually packaged cuts. And that was more palatable to fill your freezer, which is a very small freezer in Seattle. It's not a chest freezer in like Eastern Washington has. So they really need like a 20-pound box of beef, and they can't take, you know, half of a cow and put it in their freezer. So we had to have that USDA stamp to be able to do that.
Technically, an eighth of a beef will fit in an apartment-sized chest freezer.
Oh, okay.
Just in case anyone was wondering.
Yeah.
Where did you guys go to learn more about some of the kind of food safety regulations around handling, even to the point of being able to put your grain and sell it to someone via FedEx package or, you know, to learn about piecing out and the extra level of regulation? For being able to direct sale meat as pieces.
Yeah, where did I come across that? I don't know. I think it was just kind of word of mouth, connecting with other ranchers that were trying to do the same thing. Mm-hmm. I don't think I've read the official WAC rules on it.
I think at one point we were looking to sell to our local marketplace, main market co-op, and they needed the USDA, and then they also wanted
there's an insurance piece that they wanted too. We had to purchase a special kind of insurance.
So it sounds like you've been having some very interesting adventures in this kind of exploring alternative grains a little bit and vertical integration.
Yeah, we have done quite a bit of extensive testing of what will actually grow.
That's an important question, though.
Yeah, it's. I think, you know, you go to greencoverseed.com and you look at like all the different things you could put in your mix. And at the time, you know, when we were first looking at cover crops, we were like, what does grow? Like, what could actually come out of the ground and survive in our climate? There's exotic things that, you know, that are very interesting, like sun hemp or, you know, these mung beans or all sorts of strange things.
Cowpeas,
yeah, that people are trying. And what is going to work in our soils, in our environment, under our growing conditions? That was an open-ended question. But we were also looking at, you know, not just the cover crop side, but like the cash crop side. Like, what could we do to add value to our farm that we could market directly that people would find interesting? And then perhaps even pay a little bit above the normal price for, rather than just getting your classic commodity type grain.
Well, because it's more alive.
Yes. Yeah, it's more living, which goes back to our name. Some of the thought process behind the heirloom varieties, and this is completely unscientifically founded in my opinion, but the thought process is that the current seeds are grown for the current conditions, which is more of a chemistry-based agriculture. And so the idea is if you go back to an heirloom variety, then that would be a variety that would be more conducive to growing in a biological pre-chemistry-based system.
Maybe a little bit better at scavenging nutrients and use efficiency, that sort of thing.
Even thinking like the Green Revolution and the you know, bringing in the dwarf wheat genetics to shorten the crops so that it didn't lodge so much when we put large amounts of nitrogen on them. That change, it changed the structure of the plant above the ground. I can't imagine it didn't also do something to the root structure below the ground too. So it's all these things are like open questions in my mind that I wanted to address. And so we went out and scavenged and tried to find different sources of special varieties of barleys and wheats. And we tried some different kind of oats and grew them in. Out of little packets of seeds, we grew them into little one-strip trials with our hose and then collected the grain, threw them back in the ground the next year, and grew them out till we got about a five-gallon size bag of grain.
Your own locally adapted seed increase?
Yes. Uh-huh. Yes, that's what we were shooting for. And then we were looking for ways to markets like they'd be interested in that. And right about that time is the time when my dad was starting to think, well, maybe I'm going to step down and away from the farm, and could you help me a little bit more? And so I have stepped away from some of those smaller seed trials and some of the more fringe agriculture tasks that I was doing. And I've been doing the larger acres for the last 3-4 years now, taking full-time position two years ago.
Well, that's an interesting transition, actually, in the sense that I'd like to hear more about maybe how some of your adventures, when they said, oh, the farm can't support two families, and then that pushed you into doing some of these other things. And now that you're taking on more of the whole farm, how has that influenced your management?
Yeah, it really is like a sharp wake-up call to I have to make this pencil out. I have to be able to make the farm financially solvent so I can farm another year, so we can support my family and farm another year. And trying to walk that line has been difficult. It's been quite an adjustment. And I have so much respect for my parents that did that for years and navigated through that. It was just like we were talking off mic. It's just the amazing amount of hats that a farmer has to wear. With being a mechanic, you know, being an agronomist, being a bookkeeper. I mean, it can be overwhelming following all the regulations and the rules and just trying to be aware of all these things. And so I feel like I'm still trying to land on my feet after taking on all this new added responsibility.
The price of wheat probably doesn't help.
No,
with that just at the moment.
It is really challenging. I mean, we were looking at, and was it 2020 kind of in the, I mean, wheat was up there like at that peak, like $12 a bushel. Now we're sitting down around $5, which when I was in high school, we used to, my parents would pay us in grain as we did labor on the farm. And so we had the opportunity to kind of learn how the market worked. And I remember the market wasn't far off. I mean, it was probably in the high fours at that time. And it's really kind of disheartening to see how, you know, here we are 25 years later, and the prices are about the same as they were before for the product we raise, but everything else costs 2, 3, 4 times as much as it did before. And it's a real challenge that I think all of us as farmers are trying to, how do we wrestle with this? How do we find a way through and perhaps out of this trajectory that we're headed?
Well, we are here to celebrate some innovation. So maybe there's some answers in that.
Maybe.
Maybe not all of them, but maybe there's a couple.
We're searching.
Yeah. What you're saying, though, reminds me a little bit about, you know, I always like to, the Direct Seed Conference gets a lot of shout outs in this space, including from some things I've seen there. One of them, 2 years ago, I think they had a little bit more emphasis on the human dimensions of farming. Mm. And one of the talks was actually kind of elevating the intensity that farm stress can be, and also how that fluctuates day to day and through seasons.
Yeah.
And they were talking about like farm partners, which, you know, at this point in the interview, we've lost Jill. She had some other business to attend to, but in the farm partnerships, like doing a check-in of like, okay, on like a scale of 1 to 10, what's your farm stress level today?
Yeah.
And it seems like, you know, especially as we try to navigate things as a team or with partners, that maybe there's some value to, theoretically, I saw that in a presentation, and that does seem like it has some value.
Oh yeah. Yeah. In this space. I would think that'd be huge. I mean, there's those days, we've all had, farmers have them, where things, you start out the day thinking you're going to do something, and then you have a major setback, whether it's a piece of equipment that breaks down.
Or it starts on fire.
Starts on fire, and you walk in the door, and that stress that you have walks in with you. And how do you deal with that in an emotionally healthy way that doesn't hurt your family, I think is it's a major challenge. And to find the support of your spouse or your partner in that is huge in trying to navigate through the stress of the farm.
Well, and I guess that scale in the farm stress scale in particular is like, you know, like on a scale of one, oh, it's all good, I'm going fishing, to like, you know, I'm throwing wrenches and things are on fire, literally and figuratively. It seems like that check-in resonated at least with me as a very potentially useful tool in just what's that check-in, you know, because I know it's been said on this podcast before that farmers aren't necessarily the most like, let's talk about our feelings type, but that little check-in of just like, how you doing?
No, that'd be great. And just, it could be used as a way to say, I need help, you know, raising your hand and saying, yeah, I'm on a six today and I need to get this, this, and this done. So could you help me, please?
Yeah. But also if you're showing up at like an eight for the long term, like maybe there's a different kind of help.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a hard road to hoe sometimes.
The challenges that me and my family are facing are not unique. I'm sure this is something that is across the board, across the world. So
yeah. Well, thanks for sharing a little bit about that. You just got a lot of, you know, a lot of big transition. I mean, you went from farming one way and bringing on new acres, or, you know, there's a lot of things that can bring a lot more with it. And so, you know, transitions can be intense, but a lot of times we get our feet under ourselves in the end.
As always, a big thank you to our guests today for sharing their wealth of knowledge and experience with us. This podcast is produced by the PNW Farmers Network team with music credit to Carlos Flores. The views expressed in this podcast are those of the speakers alone and do not represent that of the PNW Farmers Network or any associated agencies. Please remember that experimental results will vary, and listeners are encouraged to try things at home. If you like what you heard, please support this work by sharing, rating, and reviewing. And do consider joining us as a guest or nominating a friend who is trying things on their farm. We look forward to hearing from you. Until next time, happy trials.